The Phoenix Suns started off 2023 with a dud on the road in New York City, falling to the New York Knicks 102-83. On today's episode of Locked On Suns, we'll talk the two biggest lessons from yet another bad Suns loss. Let's go.
Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past six seasons and a writer at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you all for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Tuesday. Back to work for most people. Suns basketball continues. This road trip is almost over. The mercy of the basketball gods, but hit subscribe or follow wherever you're finding the show, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, we are everywhere Monday through Friday for you. So hit that button and get the show every single day to keep up with your favorite team. Today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. First time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. That's prizepicks.com, promo code Locked On. All right, so again, the final score, 102-83, the Suns lose. Rather than the moment of the game and my big takeaway, we're just going to hit the two biggest reasons that the Suns lost this game and what they really illustrate about some more broad issues, right? Because this is one of those games where when you score 11 points in the first quarter, when you score 31 points in the first half, it kind of doesn't really matter. The nuts and bolts, the different moments of the game. You could talk about how in the beginning of the fourth quarter, Emmanuel quickly kind of helped keep the Knicks in it when the Suns were threatening to cut the lead to, you know, 15, 16 and really make a game out of it. There's all these moments, right? But really, the game was lost before it really even began, it felt like, because they could not make a shot in the first quarter. That being said, I want to talk about size, all right? It's kind of under the radar because of the injuries, because the season started off on such a bad foot from the perspective of like what lineups the Suns can build out and what their identity is going to be able to be once Jay Crowder decided to live in Atlanta for the winter. But it's really affecting the Suns. And it was probably there even when Cam Johnson was still healthy as the starting four. But I would say it's gotten even worse without having him because he is still, despite some defensive limitations, he's not an awesome rebounder. He's definitely not, you know, any sort of rim protector or anything. But at the end of the day, he's still a 6'8", 6'9", type of guy who can make shots, stay in front of his man, and helps, again, build out those lineups. Now, without him, with the center rotation not really, consistent night to night, the fact that Dario Saric hasn't been able to step up in the same way as he did before his ACL tear, and no resolution to the Jay Crowder situation, we're seeing this toggle back and forth between small and big, whether it's one lineup to the next over the course of a game, or in this case, if you just chart out the starting lineups throughout this road trip even, you could go game by game and see that wavering happening, okay? So, today we saw Torrey Craig starting at the four again, Landry Shamet starting at the two, Mikhail at the three, and then DA and Chris Paul at their normal spots. Whatever positions you want to say, that's been the starting lineup most of the year. Yeah, Bridges guarded Jalen Brunson a lot of this game, the Suns were switching a lot, et cetera, et cetera. But that's been the blueprint of the starting lineup all year, even when it's been Booker, Damian Lee, whoever. That's kind of the template. But obviously, we know against the Raptors, against some of these other teams, the Suns had started, actually, I think against the Raptors, they started Okogie, a whole other element of what even position is he and where does that put us. But I think it again shows you the second guessing that's happening, right? But before that, we saw Dario Saric got a start when Booker was injured with the first injury. We've seen Landale start several games. I'll talk about more of the rotation aspect of this coming up next. But the size part of it is important too, because if you look at the Suns defense, which is bottom five since the beginning of December, we're now going into a month plus of the Suns having one of the literal worst defenses in the league, which you would say definitely was the case again tonight. Only 102 points for the Knicks, but their offensive rating was 117.2. It was just a lower scoring game because the pace was slower. There weren't a lot of turnovers overall, and there weren't a lot of offensive rebounds. So the point totals were both on both sides a little bit low, but the Knicks still were very efficient. Shot almost 50% from the field, got to the free throw line a ton, moved the ball well. Their offense was flowing. They did not... The Suns did not keep them off the glass or keep them off the free throw line. Those are the two things that have been constant since December, whether it's a lower scoring efficient game like this or a higher scoring one like we saw against the Celtics and the Mavs in that really bad point in time, the Wizards game last week. There's been a lot, right? No matter what the context of the game is, those are two things the Suns have not been able to do. Teams most often win the rebounding battle against them. At the very least, the Suns might draw equal in offensive rebounding, but most likely they're going to allow their opponent to out-offensive rebound them, and most likely they're going to allow the opponent to out-free throw attempt them. And in this game, both were true. They were equal in offensive rebounds, so not the worst game in that mark, but the Knicks shot 25 free throw attempts. The Suns only shot 7, and both of those things come back to size, right? So when you look at a game where the Suns were back to their normal lineup, in some cases, that's true. But we saw lots of lineups with Dario and Landale together. We saw, I believe, some moments with Šarić and Ayton together. We saw some lineups where Ish Wainwright was out there with another couple of bigger wings or forwards. We saw times when the Suns were smaller. But most of the time, they're trying to stack up to be bigger. When Monty feels like the Suns are down, when he feels like they need stability, his instinct is going to be to go big. We remember the year they made the finals, they spent like 20 games of that season starting Frank Kaminsky at power forward. I believe both of the games in the regular season when the Suns played the Bucks that year, they played big. They had Kaminsky in the starting lineup. We've seen that with Dario and Frank. If you go even back to Monty's first season, there were a lot of Kaminsky and Aaron Baines lineups. Some of those at times in DeAndre Ayton's career have been to protect him a little bit, but at other times we actually even saw Ayton and Baines play together at various points. So that's Monty's MO. Doesn't have the roster necessarily to do it these days. We did see Landale start several games. He's not quite a terrible fit at the four, depending on the matchup, but it's not what's going to help with the Suns' biggest problems. Because as much as we can complain about the rebounding or the free throw attempts watching this team day in and day out, they lose those things pretty much whoever is playing. They beat the Grizzlies by finally leveling out the rebounding totals and beating the Grizzlies in that category, and they ended up winning. They got hot from three. But most nights, no matter who's on the floor, those things are problems. The Suns accepted that during their best moments in recent years, right? Jay Crowder is not an elite rebounder by any means. He's not a big player. Yeah, he defends without fouling, so there's an element of that, but I don't really think Torrey Craig is like a terrible foul guy. I don't really think any one player on the Suns outside of Ayton at times is super duper foul prone. I don't put that on any one player. It's just as a team, they haven't been able to keep the ball in front of them. So their guys are getting to the paint, and those are more likely to result in fouls. And just in general, they don't have great defenders and worse defenders that are out there, whether that's, you know, Dwayne Washington or even Damian Lee or even Torrey Craig, compared to the other guys who maybe had been in those spots in the rotation in years past, they're just going to be more likely to foul. And so those things happen. The Suns were fine in years past. Once again, with Crowder in there, with Cam Johnson in there, etc., the Suns lost the rebounding battle, you know, almost every single playoff game, I'm sure, the past 2 years. You go in, they probably lost the rebounding battle, right? They've not ever been a heavy free throw team. I'm sure there were games all throughout the past two playoffs where they were at single-digit free throw attempts, even in big, big wins. Okay, so that can't be what Monty goes back to. That can't be the the thing, the North Star that guides him. And the Suns are only going to get back on track if they play their own style. And so I think playing Craig, playing a normal lineup tonight was a good start. It obviously did not yield the results because they again lost the rebounding and free throw battles. They lost big time. They couldn't score. Everything went wrong today, even though they had a better lineup on the floor. But the best version of these Suns is going to be, you know, pick and roll offense, sharing the ball, turning defense into offense, getting up threes, and all that. It's not, we're going to be a good rebounding and free throw team and beat you at all of the things we're already bad at. You have to stop the bleeding a bit, but you also have to be who you are. And the Suns have had a lot of games lately, this one included, where not only are they getting blown out, getting embarrassed, but they're doing it on the opponent's terms. And I think that's the most frustrating. I don't know if it's the biggest problem. There's a lot to discuss in terms of problems, but it's definitely the most frustrating and confusing one to sift through. We're going to hit the rotation as well. That's number two. That's the other side of these problems. Guys coming in, then not appearing again. Guys not appearing, and then all of a sudden, here they are, starting a game. And then where are they in the rotation? We'll talk about all that next. First Today Show, brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered all year long with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline is your number one source for news, analysis, even sports betting podcasts to get you the info that you need to make your bets. It's not just about throwing money in there. BetOnline.net has the information, even injury news, all the stuff that you need. We have NBA championship odds constantly being updated here as well. The Suns have slipped a bit. They are now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Something tells me they might fall a little bit more, so I don't know if that's the smartest bet, but that's always fun to keep track of. We have women's college basketball, men's college basketball game odds, as well as obviously pro basketball NBA odds every single day. All of it at betonline.net. Your number one source. So head to the website today. That's betonline.net, or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. The size problem and the Suns reverting to big over everything is one problem that cropped up against the Knicks that we've seen a lot. Another one is the rotation. And I know a lot of you, I know a lot of every sports fan, it's a very easy thing to creep back into blaming the head coach, right? We all do it. I'm sure there have been times when I've criticized Monty for things that some other smarter basketball person would have listened and thought I was going crazy. But I do finally, I don't want to make it like I've been resisting and now here I am. I do that too much. My main point is Monty Williams did screw up, has been screwing up when it comes to the rotation, in my opinion. And it's not so much that I'm going to pretend like there's some magical lineup combination that's going to fix this team right now. Until they get fully healthy, Campaign and Landry Shamet did come back tonight. But until Cam Johnson in a couple weeks, maybe Devin Booker a couple weeks after that, until those guys really are healthy, I don't think there's any sort of rotation or lineup that's going to fully fix all of the Suns' problems. But I think the inconsistency that we're seeing right now is mainly where my issue comes in, all right? And here's what I mean by that. I mentioned the starting lineup changes, the size stuff in the last segment. I mentioned how Josh Okogie, the literal last game that the Suns played on Friday in Toronto, Josh Okogie started that game, right? He was starting two guard. Made sense. Toronto basically doesn't start a real point guard or a real center, basically. And so Okogie being a versatile, switchable piece within that made some sense. I had been advocating for Okogie to potentially even start over Torrey Craig. I still think, back to what I was saying about, you know, turning defense into offense, playing versatile, movable basketball, being the Suns' best basic identity, makes Okogie a decent fit there. All that to say, all of a sudden now you get him, he's at 4 minutes, right? Same thing with Dario Saric. He gets into the rotation in the first half, 9 minutes. I don't think he appeared in the whole second half. Who replaced him? Well, that was Ish Wainwright, who got a handful of minutes in the first half and then played a ton in the second half. You have Dwayne Washington, who didn't play any of the first three quarters and then played the whole fourth quarter. With a guy like him, it's especially confusing because we know the things that Washington needs to improve upon, right? It's what does he do when his shot doesn't fall, right? When his jumper is not going in. Can he get to the free throw line? Can he get to the basket? Can he really start to set people up as a passer? Does he have that next level of setting people up outside of just making the obvious pass? All these things that are going to have to be developed over reps, over playing at in close games, playing in blowouts, playing with this lineup and that lineup, playing with Chris Paul, without Chris Paul. You just have to feel it and get better and get more comfortable. The wrong way to get Dwayne Washington in a better rhythm and getting him more comfortable is to put him in when you're down 20 in the fourth quarter. What purpose is that serving when he's been in the rotation fully at times, other times not? We talked, you know, all the way back 2 months ago when he was had a huge 20-point second quarter against Miami, and all of a sudden he's not in there. So that's just one element. I mean, again, it's Okogie, Wainwright, Šarić, Washington. All that's four players who had incredibly confusing situations in just this one game. There is something to be said for trying stuff, right? Because the inverse of this is you criticize Monty Williams for basically, why did you not try anything? Why are you rolling the same rotation out there when it's a 20-point loss, etc.? There's probably no way to win, right? I'm not going to lie. I probably would do that if the Suns had the same exact five-man unit in this moment, then that moment, then that moment, no matter what the game situation is. There's no, again, right answer, one-stop shop, one solution for everything. But as much as there's something to be said for trying stuff, I think that we're at the point now where there has to be some level of consistency. I would say basically since Booker... No, actually. I would say since Chris Paul went out in... I think it was the 8th of November. So we're at almost 2 months. From that injury on, Monty has been way, way, way too inconsistent with the rotations. And I'm not talking about the games where he was without a bunch of players, but I'm talking about a game like this or lots of other ones, frankly, where Payne is healthy, Shamit's healthy. You know, Damian Lee's been getting 20 minutes a night pretty much no matter what. But then you have these other 3 to 5 guys every night where it's like, I don't know what quarter I'm going to see them in. I don't know what players they're going to be in the lineups with. I don't know what their job is going to be when they get into the game based on all of those context things. If I'm wondering that, if it's hard for you and me to get a read on it, imagine the players, right? Imagine you're already frustrated. You're on this bad road trip. You're losing a bunch of games. You're getting blown out. You don't have your best player. You don't know when you're getting him back. And then on top of that, you're checking in all of, okay, on Friday, I checked in, and it was, you know, 2 minutes left in the first quarter. Now I didn't even play the first half, but now we're down 20, and I'm checking in the middle of the third quarter. Okay, who am I out there with? Is Chris on the floor? Is Mikhail on the floor? Okay, no. Does that mean I need to shoot? Like, I'm probably exaggerating a little bit. These guys are all professionals. We're almost halfway through the season now. It's not as if they don't know any of these things, but it definitely doesn't feel like it's helping, and you're not getting consistent production from any of them. Part of me, you could say, okay, well, that's why they're not getting the minutes, right? Because they're not producing consistently. But I look no further than somebody like Okogie or Washington. Those, to me, are the ones that I'm going to keep coming back to. Okogie, when he has gotten 15 to 20 minutes, I'm not saying every game that he's gotten that, he's been a big positive. But more often than not, he's at least going to have a couple difference-making defensive plays. He's going to get an offensive rebound or two. You know, on a lot of nights, he's going to get a few trips to the free throw line, all things that the Suns need. And Washington, yeah, there's going to be some ugly games, but it's going to, you can tell that over the course of the season, he's already started to improve. And if you want him to have a better backup plan when his jumper's not falling, if you want him to become a better table setter for his teammates, better defender, that's only going to come with playing time, and playing time that's not when the game's already out of hand. And so I do think, you know, I don't think Jock Landale, Bismack Biyombo, or Dario Šarić, I don't think you need to prioritize a set rotation for them. That can be matchup based, right? But the other players on this team, if we assume Shamet and Lee are getting 20 minutes apiece because that's shooting that you need, ball handling that you need. Okay, so Payne is probably going to play a lot too. You know, great. So maybe that means Dwayne Washington just doesn't play most nights. Or when Dwayne Washington does play, then maybe that means you just try a game where, let's say, Damian Lee just doesn't play. Like, do it that way at least, because then you know, okay, D-Wash, like, you're playing tonight, right? Like, it's your night. Same with Okogie. Maybe that means Ish Wainwright just does not play. Maybe that means Torrey Craig doesn't play, or you bench him and you start Okogie, like I've said. Whatever, you just have to be, I think, decisive and clear, because that will help to build the habits and build the knowledge, the IQ, the chemistry that you need. That's just my two cents. It's not easy. Again, there's not a one-size-fits-all approach here, but there are things I think that could get the best out of these players. And right now, nobody's playing great. The Suns' high scorer tonight, actually, we'll get into that in just a second. We'll start with the box score oddity. I have two for you, two things that jumped out to me, starting with the one I just hinted at. First, today's show, guys, brought to you once again by Prize Picks. You know the deal. Prize Picks came in and they basically revolutionized what it means to be a sports fan who likes to have some fun with the day-to-day of sports. You pick 2 to 6 players, and if they will score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, and you can win up to 25 times your entry. The best thing about this, what makes it different than the other games you've played before, is that you're not competing against other people. It's just, again, you versus those projections. So no pool, no league, no anything. You don't even have to set a specific number of players in your lineup. You could say, let's say, who do the Suns play next? Wednesday in Cleveland. Let's say you're going to go less on DeAndre Ayton rebounds because they're going against that huge front line. But you like, hey, the Cavs don't have anybody to guard Chris Paul. So you go more on points, more on assists, whichever one for Chris Paul. You can also mix sports. They have pro basketball, college basketball, even NASCAR, tennis, MMA, whatever you love, there's going to be a projection there on Prize Picks. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less, and Prize Picks offers safe and fast withdrawals in the 30 plus states that it is currently operational in. So download the Prize Picks app now or go to prizepicks.com to sign up. First time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. So if you deposit 100, Prize Picks matches that straight to your account. So don't forget to enter the promo code Locked On at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. Today's show also brought to you by My Solar Nerd. If you live in Arizona, a sunny state, you've had people knock on your door telling you that they are there to set up free solar. But you know, like I know, free solar is not really a thing. They're just trying to overcharge you. But My Solar Nerd, their mission is simple: help you get the best solar system that fits your needs. They're local, they understand the nuances of going solar in Arizona, and they believe that an educated customer is a happy customer, and that switching to solar in Arizona should mean saving money. That's the biggest thing. Once you're ready, they'll put their industry knowledge to work for you by choosing the best equipment, warranties, and installers in their network. They'll also help you figure out all the credits and incentives that you may qualify for, and that your transition to solar is as smooth as possible. Our listeners will get a $50 Amazon gift card when you book a no-commitment evaluation. This promotion, again, only for local listeners and only for homeowners. Visit mysolarnerd.com and select Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us section to make the switch to solar on your terms. Start your research process today by visiting mysolarnerd.com and show Locked On some love by letting them know we sent you. Folks, going solar doesn't need to be complicated, and mysolarnerd.com makes it easy. Alrighty, so as I was saying heading into the break, the box score oddity of the night, I will do some of these rapid fire segments here, is that the Suns did have 5 players in double digits because everyone got in in the rotation. Everyone got on the floor with the blowout. But the high scoring player in tonight's game for Phoenix was DeAndre Ayton. Okay, maybe not a surprise. Maybe we're still not to the surprising part. With 12 points, all right? 12 points. Not a lot of games that you are going to win when your best scorer has 12 points, when your highest scoring player in a game has just 12 points. Ayton was 6 of 13 from the field. He also had 3 turnovers and only 5 rebounds. So, wasn't even a great day for him. And he was still the high watermark. A couple of other ones. One is the turnovers, which I mentioned a second ago. So this was a low turnover game overall. Only 15 total turnovers. So if I had told you, coming after the Toronto game, where the Suns couldn't help themselves and they kept turning the ball over extra time, every single time they came down the court, it felt like, especially late in the game when they coughed it up, you probably would have said the Suns won if they only had 8 turnovers. I think they had almost 30 on Friday. I don't remember, 28, I think. They only had 8 tonight. You'd be like, great, they won. But they did not. They only had 8. They lost by 19. It was ugly. Again, they were really cold from the field, only 39.1%. They did not get on the offensive glass, and they only got to the free throw line 7 times. So that illustrates it. That is your box score oddity number 2. Number 3 is maybe even more just crazy and frustrating and all of it. So again, free throws. The Knicks got to the free throw line 25 times. They scored 17 times off of that. They were 17 to 25. 6 of the shooting fouls that they received, that they drew. So they drew 15 total shooting fouls to get to the line for those 25 attempts. Now, again, some of those can be and ones, remember? So that's why that number is that way. 6 of them came from mid-range. So I actually have that wrong. They drew 9 shooting fouls. 6 of them came from mid-range. I was adding up the short mid and long mid plus the all mid, but no, that's just a combination of the two. So 6 of 9 shooting fouls drawn by the Knicks today were on mid-range attempts. That's pretty insane. They took 26 such shots compared to the Suns' 35. The Suns only drew 1 shooting foul on a mid-range attempt. So this was not, you know, the Knicks, you would look at the free throw attempts and the rebounding and everything else, the size that they have on the floor, and be like, they just got into the paint. But they really actually did not. They took the same amount of shots at the rim that Phoenix did. They only drew 3 fouls at the rim. 6 of them came from mid-range shots. So not only did you allow Randle and Brunson to each get double-digit free throw attempts, but they didn't even have to do anything difficult to draw those fouls. That is the craziest part of this entire game to me, I think, is that you're telling me that they got probably double-digit free throw attempts, almost half of their free throw attempts from mid-range shots alone. Those aren't even shots that anyone should get fouled on. Like, it really is a bummer. I think it illustrates just how much of not the Suns' day this game was, but I don't want to end on 2 downer of a note, so I will cut it right there. Today's show, not the best, but had to happen. Tomorrow, Aaron Edwards will be back. He missed last week. We'll talk something positive. That is my promise to you. We will try to find some positives. Maybe the Suns' ownership thing gets approved. First day of the new work year, work week of the new year. Let's say Matt Ishbia becomes the owner. That would be a nice thing to just expedite that process. But hit subscribe or follow to get that show and the rest this week and beyond into 2023. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today. Do it tomorrow as well. In the meantime, go make Locked On Sports today your second listen to get caught up on everything else going on around the whole world of sports. That show available on all podcast platforms. I will talk to you all tomorrow.